This is Jonathan Lane, Captain Star Trek, Jonathan Lane of Fan Film Factor, and today I'm here with Mark Sicree, Mr. Sci-Fi, Mark Sicree of Space Command. How is that?
That's great. I love it. It's terrific.
Now, folks, you probably know that Mark Sicree has written just about everything you could possibly think of in television. He's written Star Trek. He's written Tin Man, and he wrote Far Beyond the Stars and Deep Space Nine. And his project now is the fan-funded Space Command, which began crowdfunding back in 2012, right?
Yes. Yes, that's right.
And since then, you have collected over $1 million, I think, right?
Uh-huh. That's right, yes, exactly.
It's very impressive. That's a combination of crowdfunding and selling shares.
Yes, that's right, exactly.
And you now have your latest crowdfunding campaign, a Kickstarter, with a goal of, just $35,000, but you're already well over $67,000. And
yes,
you got almost, I think, 45,000 of that before you even turned on the lights because you opened it up to your previous donors. So,
yes.
Like the first 36 hours, you were up to $45,000, which is amazing.
Yes, thanks.
But anyway, I've got to ask you a question now, and this is a tough question. So this is crowdfunding for your second episode, Forgiveness.
Yes.
But the question a lot of people ask me when I first announced this is, it's been 7 years. He hasn't finished his first episode yet, the two-hour episode, and you've done, I guess, about an hour of it you've released publicly, but it's still not done yet. So people are saying, if you haven't finished your first episode yet, why should I start paying for your second episode?
That's a great question, and I'm glad you're asking it, Jonathan, because it's a question I ask myself before I take it out to the public. I'll just give you the overview of all of this stuff, because you're absolutely right. I started the campaign in 2012. The money we raised in that campaign allowed us to build our studio and roll camera on the two-hour pilot. So we actually shot the two-hour pilot in 2014 and then shot more in 2015, 16, 17 to the current date. The challenge was that on the two-hour pilot, there were 1,900 visual effects shots, which is more than Star Wars, which is more than any TV show you've ever seen. It's enormous. Now, originally, the idea was that I would bring aboard the top visual effects people working in the industry, and we would knock this thing down pretty quickly. The problem was that when I brought people like Ron Sorensen aboard, Ron designed Babylon 5 when I wrote for that show. He did the VFX, and all the visual effects shots were under his guidance, and he also won an Emmy for Star Trek, and, you know, I think it was Voyager, and so forth. He was one of the giants of the industry, worked on Battlestar Galactica. But when I brought him aboard to oversee everything, something was wrong with him, and very quickly we discovered that he had fallen ill, and he actually ended up dying of that. So each time I've been building visual effects units, there have been challenges, which is why I put the hour out on my YouTube channel on Mr. Sci-Fi, because I wanted people to see that we actually are doing something of a very high quality with wonderful acting, wonderful visual effects. And as with when I wrote The Twilight Zone Companion, which took 5 years, and when I wrote the book of Guillermo del Toro, which took 4 years, you know, I do it until it's right. And so would I have preferred to have gotten it done more quickly? Yes. But, you know, two of our visual effects team have died suddenly and sadly. One of our sound designers died. He was hit by a car and was killed. You know, other people have had other various challenges. Again, if I were a studio, for instance, the first 2 hours of Space Command minimally would have cost $10 million, $20 million. I mean, one episode of Game of Thrones is $15 million. One episode of Star Trek Discovery is $10 million. And so a studio, I would have had hundreds, if not thousands, of people working for me, but our team is very, very small, so it takes longer. But to offset that, I've been in constant communication with my audience. So anyone who wants to subscribe to my YouTube channel, Mr. Sci-Fi, or to me on Facebook or Twitter or Space Command Facebook page, I'm posting every single day. And so they've been able to see the dailies. They've been able to see scenes. They've been able to see entire visual effects sequences. So it isn't as though I raised the money in 2012 and then, you know, bought myself a yacht and toured the world. It's basically so the new relationship with the audience is very different from the relationship. So I've worked for all the major studios and networks, hundreds of hours of produced television. But the reason I chose to do this my audience initially was that I didn't want someone from the studios or the networks ruining it or pulling the plug on it where it would never be seen. You know, there was a great pilot that George R. R. Martin made before Game of Thrones called Doorways that was about characters traveling to alternate dimensions, I liked it better than Sliders. And I say that as a producer who worked on Sliders and wrote for Sliders. But Doorways got made. It was a wonderful pilot. It would have been a wonderful show, and no one ever saw it. So I didn't want to give power away in that regard. I wanted my audience to see Space Command. I wanted them to be able to share this journey with me. So now I have a visual effects artist working full-time, you know, finishing the 2 hours. But we also shot 40 minutes of the second 2 hours, and that was simply because when we were putting the sets in storage, we realized we had the sets, the costumes, everything. Because I've written the first 8 hours of the 12-hour season and the prequel and the novels written and, you know, so forth, and we're doing a graphic novel as well. So,
yeah, you've written an amazing amount of stuff for this.
Yes.
It's staggering. Yes. So, you know, almost an entire season is ready.
Yeah.
But I guess the main thing is, and the question people have is, why don't you finish your first episode before starting work on your second episode or trying to crowdfund your second episode?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a great question. It's a fair question. If I, right now, for instance, today I'm spending, after I get off the phone with you, Jonathan, I'm going to be going to my co-producer and sound designer, Dave Bartlett, and we're going to spend the day working on the sound mix for the first hour, making it stronger. We're going to be sending out DVDs and Blu-rays of the first hour, and it'll have all these incredible extras, and then we'll also have a link to the rough cut of the second hour. So if someone wants to see the rough cut before the final, they can. So that's not stopping. The post-production on the first hour is moving along. But the second hour, we shot 40 minutes of it, and it has Ferran Tahir and James Hong from Blade Runner and Big Trouble in Little China. It has Doug Tate, who's a creature actor who's going to be in Star Trek Picard. He's one of the regulars in Star Trek Picard. You know, it's sort of like the opportunity is so great to finish that. The script is completely written. It's terrific. Why not? I mean, my thought was, let's get, since it's been so long, instead of just giving someone 2 hours of the show, let's make the entire season. Meantime, we're pitching it to the networks. We're pitching it to Netflix. I had a meeting with ABC 2 weeks ago. We're in contact with Netflix. We're in contact with Amazon. It's sort of like, would I prefer that Netflix or Amazon picked it up a couple of years ago? Yeah, I mean, I've been pitching it, but I don't have say over whether they pick it up or not. So that was one of the decisions to continue making it, because whether or not it gets picked up by Netflix or Amazon or whomever, we're going to make the season and then continue beyond that. What I'm basically building is a new model where ultimately the audience will determine what shows get made, and it'll be essentially like subscribing to your favorite show. You know, if Gene Roddenberry had had this back when the original Star Trek was canceled, he would have just gone to his audience for season 4 and they would have financed it, or season 3. We wouldn't have had to send a million letters to NBC to get the third season. So essentially, I view the audience as my partners and as my collaborators. Would I have preferred it not take 7 years? Yeah, you know, but I'm willing to take it for the long haul. I mean, my whole mantra is quality is the most important thing. People can go on Mr. Sci-Fi right now. They've been able to go on Mr. Sci-Fi since January and watch the first hour. And the hour that they're going to watch there, we've been completing sequences, polishing them, even making that hour stronger. And so it's an ongoing process. But my goal is by the end of this year to have the first 4 hours, well, to have the first 2 hours done, to have the second 2 hours completely shot and have post-production done on that or moving toward being done, and then shoot the rest of the 12 hours. You know, and we're also, as I say, doing the graphic novel of the prequel and also doing that as a radio play. So, we're moving along. It's great. It's fun.
Yeah, and for those of you who haven't seen it yet, and I'm going to probably include it on the blog just to watch, the first hour is really staggeringly good. A lot of folks saw the first half hour that you released, and, you know, they were kind of impressed, and some people were like, okay, well, the hair's not moving in the wind, and there's not really a lot of stuff. But if you can stay for the second half hour, things really start picking up. You get out of the exposition. You start getting into the action. That's Mira Furlan does one of the most amazing acting jobs I've seen her do since Delenn, even including Delenn. I mean, she's just an amazing actress. Doug Jones just completely nails it. Robert Picardo is amazing anytime he does anything. You just got such amazing performances out of these actors. Now, that was you as a director, right?
Elaine and I are writing, my wife and I are writing, directing, and producing the show. And also one thing you mentioned, Jonathan, that I want to talk about, because the new model of being responsive to your audience and being in conversation with your audience through the creative process, you mentioned that in the driving scene, the hair doesn't move. If you go back and look at it now, it does. And that meant that we had to actually sit down with our actors, film their hair being blown and then, you know, and then map that onto their heads and match move. And another thing we're doing is that there's going to be a reflection on the windshield of that car. That's not there yet, but it will be. And so again, it's an, it, another fun part of this is if we can say, okay, watch the episode, but then if you go back, it'll be, you know, different. And one of the things I'm thinking of having on the Blu-ray and the DVD is, as an extra, is a completely different hour, which will have entirely different visual effects that will show the process of our visual effects evolution. So you'll be able to see alternate versions of many of the scenes with completely different visual effects. And so that's going to be very, very fun because we've gone through such a journey on that. And there's a ton of stuff coming. And but please, go ahead.
Yeah, and actually, I compared them. I had the original half-hour video open at the same time when you released the first hour, and I was going into sort of comparing, and I was noticing that the color was optimized in certain scenes differently,
yes.
And I noticed that there were slight editing changes, and there is definitely, uh-huh. you know, improved visual effects. So it's really, it's for me, it's fascinating. And by the way, in my blog, I link to the original half hour as well, which you can go and take a look at it on YouTube and compare them. It's really, really fascinating to look at. You really get to watch the sausage being made, so to speak. Anyway, Mark, speaking of making the sausage, I would like to ask you a question that I don't think anybody's asked you yet.
Sure.
And I don't think you've even mentioned yet in all of your Mr. Sci-Fi broadcasts, but
okay.
you go to a lot of meetings. You met with ABC, you met with Netflix, whoever else you met with. When you set up these meetings, can you tell us the process that you go through to get the meetings in the first place? And then
yes.
what happens during these meetings? What do you say? What do you do? What do you show them?
Well, the first thing they say is, would you like a beverage? And you say yes, because you're going to be talking a lot, and so you want to not have your mouth go dry.
Always get water.
You know, yeah, always get water. And then I also tell people that I mentor, I say, always ask for a bottle of water, because then at least you got something. And you know, so, but I mean, the real answer to this is, it's all about building credibility, because the thing with the executives is, they're usually predisposed toward no in any meeting, because that's the safe answer. And so your goal is to try to predispose them toward yes so you can sell a show. But that means building relationships with them, building connections, building credibility. And so that's the interesting journey, because a lot of people think it's about having a great idea or a great product. It's not at all. It's basically them thinking, what's the safe choice for them so that if it fails, they won't lose their job. And so that makes it doubly challenging. So one of the things I started doing, and those who've been following me on Mr. Sci-Fi have been observing this journey, because the first journey, of course, was making the show and making it wonderful and bringing it together and building the, see, one thing about science fiction is you have to build almost everything. Like on a show like Sliders, when I was a producer on that, or on Next Gen or DS9, I didn't have to build the infrastructure. It was already there. And with Space Command, everything you see is something that I basically built from nothing, you know, from scratch. And so, I mean, I love that part of it, but it is a lot more heavy lifting. But then once I shot the 2 hours and started to have something I could show, that at first it was trailers, then it was completed sequences, then it was the first half hour, now it's the hour, I started going to conferences and meeting the executives so they would know me, and having those conversations that would lead to meetings. It isn't just to call them and say, hey, I've got an idea, and you know, let me come on in. That's not it at all. So now I have a lot of executives, a lot of networks who like me, like my work. So again, it's just building to critical mass where they can't say no. And part of that is just, you know, I mean, I have so many fans who are already very powerful. I mean, you know, people like Damon Lindelof and Glenn Mazzara and, you know, Guillermo del Toro and all these other people, you know, Ron Moore and Brandon Braga, on and on, all the great showrunners
not
in Hollywood.
Not bad to happen to your bullpen there.
Right. I mean, these are people who really love my work. Now, I'm also, by the way, creating a project down the road where I'll be creating 6 new shows with 6 major showrunners, and we can talk about that as well. But again, it's basically getting the networks and all of these executives, the VOD platforms, to say, okay, we love this, we trust you, the answer's yes. And we haven't gotten there yet, but we're hoping to. But the point was, I decided that I'm going to continue anyway. How can I explain this? The first obligation I have is to my audience, and to create something wonderful and moving and inspiring and swell, something that would entertain me as much as my audience. And that's what we've already succeeded at that. You know, when you talk about how impressive the first hour of Space Command is, I'm very gratified to hear that. because it started in my mind where I knew it would be great, and now it's like showing, being able to show it to the world where they can see how fun it is and how wonderful. And we have many more actors coming aboard, Gigi Edgley and Armin Shimerman and Ethan Phillips and J.G. Hertzler and on and on. It looks like I'll be meeting Mark Hamill shortly, and I'll be talking to him about Space Command. And, you know, so it's sort of like I'm so eager to shoot more of it so you can see and everyone can see, you know, who's going to be in it and what they're going to be playing and how cool it's going to be. It's so fun. It's such a fun toy box.
You know, I don't know if you're aware, but I'm making my own fan film now. Obviously not $1 million fan film. I'm trying to raise $20,000.
Great.
But it's, you know, as things start coming together, it's a magical experience. I know what you mean. You just, you know, you've got this passion for something. And I tried to create at least like 20 seconds of the opening with my visual effects guy and my music guy, and the sound effects are going
That's great.
And as things just start coming together, it's almost like one of those PBS specials where the guy is painting, you know, and he paints the mountain and it looks great, and then he puts the snow on. It's like, oh, that looks even better. And then he puts the trees on, like, oh, my God, that looks even better. Stop now. And he puts more stuff on. So even better. So I know exactly what you're talking about. So, when you go to these meetings with ABC and Netflix, you know, so how are you doing your best to turn a no into a yes?
Right.
You know, give me an example of what a conversation would be.
Well, it's so interesting because when you're an old hand in the business, like Elaine and I are, there's a conversation under the conversation. It's fascinating because when I have people in the meeting who haven't been in the business a long time, they think the words that are being said are what's actually being communicated, and that's not it at all. There's all these signals under what's being said where, how can I explain this? For instance, when I had the meeting with ABC, I went to England. There was the C21 Drama Summit. I met an executive from ABC. She said, oh, I'd wanted to meet with you here, but I didn't have time in my schedule. Let's meet back in L.A. I said, great. So then it takes several months to set that meeting. So we go in, Elaine and I go in, and so first I'm talking about Space Command. I'm saying this is what we're doing. This is the plan. But then also I'm talking to her about Disney's acquisition of, you know, the Disney VOD platform, their acquisition of Star Wars, all of these things, how they're positioning themselves. Because then we can start talking about doing a slate of series, not just one show but many. And so if that executive then moves to the VOD platform or opens a door to the VOD platform, that gives us enormous possibility because – you know, then it's like, okay, here's how we fit with what you're doing, and here's how you could fit with what we're doing. So it becomes a strategic conversation about possibility. So it isn't about now. It isn't about the sale now. It's about building a relationship that leads to something much larger sooner rather than later. But it's also where you're saying, okay, let me make a connection with this company and this executive and maybe that fellow showrunner. And then you basically the stars align. So it's almost like a chess game where you're playing the strategy. So you're pitching the project, but you're also looking for what excites them. And what, like, for instance, I met an executive from Netflix in London. He was a huge science fiction fan, so we flew to London. We pitched Space Command to him. But then it was clear that he didn't have the clout with the other executives to basically push it through. So the door isn't closed there at all, but it's just about, okay, how do we build critical mass where either he gets promoted, where he can then say, you know, that Space Command project, Let's have a follow-up conversation about that. So if he moves up in the hierarchy, which he may well do, that gives that opening. Or alternatively, if we make another friend at Netflix who is on our side, we can say, well, here's this guy in London. You reach out to him, and then that can form. It's all about forcing open a door, and that's what it's about. So, for instance, we're doing a project now with someone in the House of Lords in England, a feature project, but now they're starting to talk about doing it as a series. And so we're talking. We've brought aboard a producer who's worked with HBO and BBC. She's friends with someone who created The Crown and runs that show. He also did The Queen. He also did Frost Nixon. So it's like, well, we flag that project to him. If he comes aboard on that, we walk that into Netflix. If that sells, then we can say, by the way, we've got a science fiction project we're doing too. Now we're doing a series with them. That gives us great credibility to sell Space Command to them because we already have a show with them. So again, it's looking down the road and thinking strategically. But the fun part now is, because my fans are ongoingly helping me make Space Command by investing $7,500 in a Space Command share or more than that, you know, multiple shares, or throwing some money at the Kickstarter campaign, this like what we're doing right now. For instance, last night I had a meeting with one of my producers on Space Command, and he's going around and looking at vacant stores that have closed, like Kmart and supermarkets and Sears stores that have been vacant for years, to see if we can get a good deal on one of those to convert it into our studio. Because we're going to take the Seth out of storage, because we're building an alien hibernation ship. We're building creatures. We're going to be shooting in August, September. And so we would have a studio again, and then we could just keep shooting. So it's just a matter of raising enough money to keep shooting ongoingly. And we just shot a scene with Nichelle Nichols a few weeks ago for Space Command. We flew Ethan McDowell out from Atlanta, and we shot the scene at Nichelle's house. And then, as you were talking about visual effects artists, we have a shot where we're looking out to her garden through the window, and we just put a spaceship in her garden. It's a small spaceship like Ethan, Captain Kemmer, flew there and landed, and now he's having a conversation with her, and that's going to be in this. And these are two-hour episodes, by the way. So when you talk about the first episode, it's 2 hours. When you talk about the second one, it's 2 hours. The first season of Space Command is 12 hours, made up of 6 two-hour stories that can be split down the middle to make 12 episodes.
Now, Nichelle's going to be in your first episode or your second episode?
Second one, in Forgiveness, the one we're raising money for now. I met her when I was 10, when Star Trek was on the air. She was incredibly kind to me, and she signed at our Space Command booth at Comic-Con last year, and ever since then I wanted to have her in Space Command, so it took till now to be able to get her in, and we wrote a scene specifically for her, and she's quite wonderful in it. I mean, we've edited it. It looks great. She looks great. I mean, it's going to be a great thing for both the legacy of Star Trek and for Space Command, and I couldn't be more happy.
Oh, that's fantastic. So, yeah. And all you had to do was just land a spaceship on her azaleas.
yes, exactly.
Now, when you say you landed a spaceship in her garden, you just sort of that CGI. You didn't really, bring a spaceship and park it.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. But I'll tell you something interesting. We have a couple contests going. We have one contest where people can make spacesuits, and everyone who enters that contest gets credited as a spacesuit builder on the show in the credits. And then we have another contest we've just announced that starts July 1st, where people can send us designs for futuristic cars, and we choose one and we ship my Corolla to them, and they build it into a futuristic car that we then use in the show. So that's, and they get credited.
Yeah, I saw those things, and I thought to myself, that is just wacky, but it's kind of brilliant.
Yes.
Obviously, you need these designs anyway. And I'm guessing that you're thinking specifically that there's people in the industry who are costumers or people who are machinists and are car designers or whatever who would love this opportunity. You're not necessarily just looking for my 8-year-old son Jaden to make you a spacesuit.
No. But for instance, there's a high school in New Jersey that just put on Alien, the movie Alien, as their high school play, and
I saw that.
Scott.
I wasn't there live, but I saw it on YouTube.
Yeah, but I flew there for their final performance, and I spent the day with the kids advising them and coaching them if they wanted to have careers in the industry, and they're now going to be building props for Space Command, and they'll be coming out here, and I'll be helping them in any way I can, and we're going to be teaching class, like maybe going there and having a tutorial for them with some of our team. I mean, it's basically, we're welcoming the world in, and it was very interesting when I had the meeting with ABC, and I was telling them about some of the stuff I was doing. They said, "Oh gosh, we wouldn't be able to do that because of the legalities." And it's like, to not have to ask permission is so liberating, because it's sort of like, when I was a kid, if they had a contest on the original Star Trek where the fans could have built a shuttlecraft, like design and build a new shuttlecraft and we'll use it on the show. Can you imagine how cool that would have been? And
grassroots. So
if there's a high school car club, an automotive class that wants to take my Corolla and turn it into a spaceship, into a futuristic car, absolutely, they have an equal chance as anyone. They don't have to have worked in the industry, and that's the fun part, because people often think of breaking into Hollywood as like, oh my God, how do you do that? It seems so impossible. And so in a way, I'm happy. When I was with those kids in New Jersey when they were putting on Alien, I kept saying to them, this is Hollywood. You're Hollywood. Hollywood is now the world. And so I'm thrilled to be working with people anywhere. And if they bring the passion and the heart and the commitment to artistry, I'm not a snob. I don't care. I mean, some of our team has worked on Blade Runner and Star Wars, and some of our team is just starting, and they're brilliant. I mean, Eric Rodriguez, who's designing our sets and our creatures for the Alien spaceship, he's not well known, but Ian McKaig, who designed Darth Maul and Queen Amidala and the villain in the latest Avengers film, I mean, he's a legend, and he's our character designer, but I view them as equally brilliant, and so it's really fun.
Now let me give you another tough question. It's a hypothetical, but not so hypothetical. So Netflix calls you up, and it's your dream come true. And they say, yeah. Mark, we want Space Command. We've got $50 million we're going to give you for season one. Mm-hmm. But we can't use the footage you already shot because it looks too amateurish for us. I mean, it looks great for you, mm-hmm. obviously. It's great. But, you know, we want to start all over again. We want to create new sets. We want to get new actors in here, new designs, new everything. What do you say?
Well, you know, it depends on the conversation, you know, because first of all, everyone who's sort of like, I'm writing this for me and for my audience. I mean, I'm the same as my audience. So if something jazzes me, I usually have a feeling, I mean, like Far Beyond the Stars or the stuff I did for Sliders or any of the shows I've written. I mean, it thrilled me and it thrilled my audience. So, and, you know, I grew up with Harlan Ellison's, you know, episodes and Ted Sturgeon, and I had the right teachers, of course, Ray Bradbury and so Rod Serling. And so if they came to me and said that, I would say, okay, first of all, what I would do is I would take my salary and I would continue shooting the season that I envisioned with the cast I envisioned, because I would be able to do that because I don't need $50 million to do that. But I would say, okay, let's look and see if we can design a secondary Space Command show that fits within my universe and would be an adjunct to what I've done. So it wouldn't be like wiping the slate clean, because that would be incredibly disrespectful to my actors, to my fans, to everyone who's labored so hard on this. But if I could make it like a secondary universe, it's at least a conversation I would have. But since I'm not ruled by money, someone dangling $50 million in front of me doesn't speed my heart up at all, because I'm looking for what allows me to make what I want to make that my audience wants to see. And so I'm at a stage in my life where I don't need to be a court jester for a network executive. And, you know, so that's a great feeling, just to let you know.
Dream come true.
Yeah, because you can see so many of my friends run network shows. And, you know, I think I mentioned tangentially that I'm creating something called the Showrunners Network that will be the project beyond Space Command. And we'll continue making Space Command, but this is the one, you know, the bigger, crazier project. And I came up with this idea because I noticed there's 500 shows on the air now, 500 scripted dramas and comedies. You can't even follow what's on. I mean, even in science fiction, there's shows that you hear about, and it's like, when's that coming on? They'll say, well, it's been on for 3 seasons. It's like, really? And, you know, but I noticed that more and more they were using the names of the showrunners to promote the show. So it's like from the creator of Mad Men, from the executive producer of The Walking Dead. So I thought, well, gee, I know a lot of these guys. How about this? And my idea was I would co-create 6 new shows with 6 major showrunners, all of whom previously had created hit TV shows and or movies and run them. And we would basically lay out the shows together, write the pilots, and then go to our audience, finance all 6 pilots in the production, and then take it out as a slate of 6 shows. And so I reached out to my friends, and so far, the ones who are aboard, I'm currently creating the first show with Rockne O'Bannon, who created Farscape, Alien Nation, Sequest, and Defiance, and he's just accepted a position as executive producer on Evil, which is the new show by the creators of The Good Wife. But he and I are continuing to work on the project we're doing. It's called Sweet Haven, science fiction show. And the second show is being created by me and Mark Fergus and his partner. They created and run The Expanse and also wrote Children of Men and Iron Man. And for the third spot, Dan O'Bannon's widow has given me access to his unmade projects. So he wrote Alien and Total Recall. He's a legend. He starred in Dark Star, co-wrote that, you know, and did Return of the Walking Dead. And so it'll be six shows with 6 people of that quality. And I'm reaching out to people like George R. R. Martin and Ron Moore. I've worked with them in the past. We'll see who's got the time and the inclination.
Don't distract George R. R. Martin. He's got 2 more novels.
Yes, exactly. But I'm going to email him and I'm going to say, hey, George, did Doorways ever revert back to you? Because I'd love to do that show. And it was a terrific show. And, you know, so, but what I did was I sat down and I generated 350 ideas for shows. And I share that list with my collaborators. And then we see if something sparks, if they have something in their back pocket that we want to work on, and then we move forward. So that's something also that I'm working on while I'm working on Space Command. And because I come out of television, multitasking is not difficult for me. It's second nature. And, you know, so I love that part of the job. But just like World Enough in Time, the Star Trek New Voyages episode I wrote and co-wrote and directed and produced was like a trial run for Space Command. Space Command is basically leads to the Showrunners Network. It's all basically where we and you might say, well, why would someone like Rockne O'Bannon, who's executive producing a show on CBS, why would he want to co-create a show, you know, totally outside the loop? The reason is because these guys get very tired of having to listen to network notes and having to jump through those hoops. And we've all seen shows where they start great and then you go, wow, that went south. Why was that? It's usually not because the writer, producers screwed up their own show. It's more often than not that the network notes they had to address screwed it up. And so the idea of total freedom where you can write, I mean, the Space Command, I write it, I cast it, I shoot it, done. Because if I had gone to a network and said, hey, I want to do a show with Robert Picardo and Doug Jones and Bill Mumy and Mira Furlan, they would have said, who are they? They would have said, no, we won't approve those actors. We want some actor from the CW who can't act. And I would have had to say, well, okay, I guess. You know, and now Doug Jones is famous because of Shape of Water and Star Trek Discovery. But when I cast him in Space Command, that was before those shows and those movies. And so I just recognized talent and was eager to work with him. So freedom is really nice.
Now, you just talked about multitasking, but, man, it sounds like, you know, with the Showrunners Network and with all these meetings that you're having, you know, plus, mm-hmm. you know, trying to get the first episode of Space Command finished and the second episode and doing your Mr. Sci-Fi podcasts.
Right.
You know, and I see you're doing that while you're walking your dog, so I, you know, understand that you are multitasking. But it sounds like you are burning a lot of candles at the same time, my friend. So, you know, you want folks to give you money.
Right.
And, you know, how do they know that this project is going to continue to be on the front of your radar?
That's a great question. Space Command is in the first position. It doesn't take a backseat to any of this other stuff. I'll give you an example in terms of just my schedule. For instance, as I said, today, as soon as we're done with this podcast, I go and I spend the day with my sound designer, sound mixer, and we improve the sound in the first hour. Preparatory to sending that DVD out in the next few weeks. Tomorrow, I'm sitting down with one of my visual effects guys and my editor on Space Command. We're watching the first hour to see what needs tweaking, and then we're talking about the sequences that are now being done for the second hour. You know, I'm bringing aboard a social media guy to help expand our audience on Space Command, because the more people we have who know about it, the more people who will love it, the more people who will pledge to it, the more we can get it done quicker. You know, so again, this is also, and also, Elaine and I have just written a scene. There's an actress named Angelique Scott who's quite wonderful, and she's playing Nathaniel Freeman's daughter in the third Space Command episode, Great Solar War. So we're going to be shooting that scene June 21st. And so even before we reopen the studio and start shooting Forgiveness, the second two-hour story, we've already shot several scenes of the third two-hour story, Great Solar War. And we also just put up the entire, the names of all the episodes in the first season. So if you go on the Internet Movie Database in the next few days, you'll be able to see all of the episodes, what the titles are, who's in them, as far as we know at this point, for the entire first season. And as I say, those scripts are 8 hours of those 12 hours are written, plus the one-hour prequel. And by the end of this year, I plan to have all 12 hours written, and I know exactly what happens in them. I mean, I already know that. So I would say 80% of my time is spent on Space Command, minimally, in any given week. And then, you know, if I have a spare hour, you know, or so, I'll write some scenes or work on the stuff with Rocky O'Bannon or Mark Fergus or whomever, you know, but that's a long-term project. My plan for that is simply to have the pilots written by this year, and then next year would be when we would, you know, start to roll camera. But again, that's another reason why having a standing studio is a very good idea, because we can utilize stuff that we're building in one show. We can redress it for another. We can, you know, reach out to set builders and say, okay, instead of tearing down these sets when you finish shooting them for a movie or a TV show, send them to us. We'll take them. And that's exactly what happened with our cave set. Someone called me and said, would you like a cave set? I'm closing my studio. And I bought it from them, and we've used it a lot. So, you know, so that's part of the fun of it. But Space Command has and remains my first obligation and my first priority and my first enthusiasm. I mean, I wake up every day just thrilled. You know, with the spacesuit contest, I've got someone mailed me a spacesuit. How cool is that? You know, it'll fit Ethan McDowell. That's the main thing, our lead actor. But also when I was at the Doctor Who convention in Atlanta a few weeks ago, unbeknownst to me, an astronaut came to our screening, a real astronaut. So afterwards I said to him, hey, you want to be a fan, like a judge in our spacesuit contest? And his eyes lit up. And he said, well, I'd have to get NASA approval, but sure. So that's what we're doing now, getting approval so he can be a judge in the contest, along with Rick Sternbach and the spacesuit builder from Prometheus and The Martian and Doctor Who. So, you know, it's really cool.
Oh, my goodness, it's so exciting. All right.
Yeah.
So to wrap up here, let's get back to your current Kickstarter, which is at about $67,000 while we're doing this interview.
Yes.
It might be higher by the time I actually post this. At that point, there's going to be about a week and a half to go. You're going to make your money. It's Kickstarter. You have to hit your goal. Your goal was 35. You're over that.
Yes.
You've got 705 backers right now as I take a look at it. And you're at $67,000. You want to be where? What would you like to finish this Kickstarter with?
Well, minimally, if we top 100,000, that allows us to really build the sets, make the creatures, roll camera. Every dollar that goes beyond that allows us to finish what we started of the second 2 hours story. Now, that doesn't stop us, as I said, from completing the first 2 hours. That's the primary objective. But this is to shoot that second 2 hour story. We've already got 40 minutes of it done and edited, and it's great. You know, so this is just the stuff in the alien hibernation ship with creatures, and there's a framing story with Mira Furlan. And so the closer we get to like 200,000, the better. But that's where if people step up to buy shares, that can be the additional money we need. So it's basically putting it together. So, you know, right now we're at a stage where we can build the set. We can build the creatures. We can, you know, bring our actors together. We're going to rent the studio, the physical space. We'll be able to do that. But then to roll camera, that's hiring the actors, hiring the crew. That's where every dollar that gets closer to 200,000 then allows us to do that. But if we don't get that much money, then we have enough now where we can continue forward. And over the next few months, I can reach out to investors. I can reach out to whomever. And just be inventive like I have in the past, you know, number of years. And also, you never know where I just met a new executive at Amazon, so I'm sending him the information. I met him at the Nebula Awards. And so you never know when someone may watch the hour and say, I love this, we're going to buy it. And then it becomes a whole new conversation. But again, my obligation is to the fan. Frankly, I don't really care what network executives think. If they love it, great, we have a conversation. And if they buy it, great, we have a conversation. But no one is going to just do anything that's going to screw over the fans, because that's not what my life is for. I'm not here to do that. I'm here to honor the fans and create work that will last and that will be meaningful to all of us.
So right now, what it sounds like what you're hoping for is at least $100,000 from the Kickstarter.
Yes.
And preferably $200,000. Now, if you don't hit the $100,000, tap out at like 75 or whatever. Can you still start filming, or are you going to need to do yet another crowdfunding campaign to get to that point?
We can start filming, and again, we can definitely roll camera. It's just the question of how far can we get along. You know, the script is totally written, but on the other hand, it's a thing where it just means I have to be more inventive. And again, I'll reach out to my investors. I'll say, because that's what I did with the 40 minutes I shot when we were closing down the studio to shift the money to post-production, and I realized we had the costume sets and props to shoot 40 minutes of the second story, I contacted my investors and I said, listen, if you can send us, you know, $40,000, we can shoot all of this. And they did. And it went about 20 grand over, so I then had to hustle and I took a script assignment and I did things to make, you know, to get us out of that hole. But that allowed us to move the ball forward. And this is all about moving the ball forward. It's about getting to the finish line. And for me, the finish line is getting that first season shot and completed and out to my audience, and then continuing into season two. You know, I mean, I love science fiction. I'm doing this because I love it. That's the only reason. And it's not to advance my career. I've already had a great career. You know, but this is more fun for me. I would not go back to a single day in my previous career. I would, if someone said you could wake up tomorrow and you could be working at Universal like I did with Sliders or Paramount, you know, like I've done with a number of shows, I wouldn't choose that. I love this. I think this is more fun than anything I've ever done. And I'm still setting challenges for myself. And my editor said, you're not just climbing a mountain, you're building another mountain to put on top of that mountain so you can keep climbing. And I said, yeah. I said, exactly. That's exactly what I'm doing. And it's a joy. It's a pure joy.
Well, Mark, thank you very much. That was a wonderful interview. And just to remind folks, the Kickstarter is up for another, I guess, about 10 days at the point I'm planning to post this. So that'll be the 22nd of June. Is that correct?
Yes. And also on the hour, we have trailers for including the second 2-hour story and the third 2-hour story. So you can see where we're headed. And it's very exciting.
It's a really exciting project. So folks, if you haven't donated yet, please consider it. If you have donated, consider donating more like I did. And of course, tell your friends. Even if you can't donate anything, your friends might be able to, your family might be able to, somebody might really like this concept and want to be a part of it. And let me tell you, I've been a part of it for years. Mark is very, very prolific. Is the best word I could think of to describe you, Mr. Sci-Fi,
yeah.
In communicating. You get stuff from him pretty much like once a week, sometimes twice a week. You will never wonder where your money's going.
Yes, exactly. And subscribe to Mr. Sci-Fi, because that's how you can see all of the stuff I'm up to, and it's great fun.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mark, and best of luck to you.
Thank you, Jonathan. I've really enjoyed our conversation.